You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. You're listening to Sound Poetry. This is Radio Tacoma, KTAH 101.9 FM. We'd like to welcome Michael Shine of Portland today to hear his wicked, witty readings of several poems. We can't hold back from hearing as many as we can because I think it'll cheer you up. Welcome, Michael, to Sound Poetry.
Thanks, David. And I just want to mention that I'm of Portland now, but I was of Seattle and always loved Tacoma very much. We used to go down every year for first night.
Well, I see that you have a Puget Sound historical novel to your credits here too. So I imagine that one is set up in some locale of the bones beneath our feet in Indian country by the looks of the front cover.
Right, a lot of it at the Nisqually River Delta in that area where the Puget Sound Indian War of 1855 to 56 was fought. And that's Bones Beneath Our Feet. That was kind of a moving experience for me to spend 5 years immersing myself in that history.
So we have Michael Shine, not only a poet, but a novelist of several novels. And so we'd like to start out with a work that I read and found quite forceful for poets to heed the metaphors. Michael, exhort us. Give us an exhortation.
All right. Thanks, David. This is called Exhortation. Poets, you are the lips on fish swimming the upstream of tomorrow. The fish resurrected after the ocean succumbs to the tongue of dead economies, dead ideologies, the moribund and liquefying rhetoric of the hedge fund. Poets, you are the tango of redemption, the cha-cha of chutzpah, the Aztec two-step of the bebop of ecology. You are the ace up the sleeve of the laughing Buddha, the codex of afternoon sex, the ex-stutterer texting the elocution experts, the voice of Nav saying, turn left at the next chromosomal mutation, right on the sublimated passion parkway, straight into the womb of yes. Poets, ask not what your askew sanity can juice from the reproductive machinery of death, but what the collisionist junk heap of death says of the living. Poets, eschew the static of deception that pits us versus our verses, me versus you, red versus blue, mind versus heart. Poets, let your word be a start, a seed, a lantern in nightest dark. Let them illuminate the pumpkin's grin, the fugue of longing in a dog's meow, the sperm romancing the egg, the ancient chant streaming from compassion to regeneration to muse to music to the polyphonic squeal of gladness fruiting again and again in the hodgepodge stew pot of fecund life. Poets!
Well, if that didn't wake up the poet in you, I don't know what else can. Become lanterns in the nightest dark. A nice twist there. So you've been a poet for many, many years, I take it. Not just starting in your later life, but you've also taught. You've also been a coordinator of groups of poets. Tell us about the Lip Fuse group.
I'd love to, because it's near and dear to my heart. Lit Fuse Poets Workshop is an annual workshop held in Tioughton, which is in central Washington near Yakima. You go to Yakima, then you head back towards the foothills into fruit growing country. And there's this lovely town, Tioughton, that a couple of folks have turned into an artisan community, or at least parts of it. They bought some abandoned fruit warehouses, and there's all kinds of sculptural art. There's a mosaic studio. There's a letterpress there. And we started the annual Poets Workshop. it's very much a workshop. You know, it's not aimed at publication per se. It's not aimed at fiction. It's very much for poets to work hard together and have fun with the craft. We've had featured artists like Lorna de Cervantes, the profound Latina poet, Dorian Law, Christopher Howell, Ellen Bass, Marvin Bell, Ilya Kaminsky. All these have been our featured artists over the years. And so it's just an invigorating time, you know?
Yeah, you must have had quite an experience as the coordinator of that. But you've also probably done some presentations in the workshop yourself then, without these famous ones being the main presenter, right?
You know, it's better for the coordinator to step back. I think I put myself on the faculty 1 year, but I'm frankly not qualified at the level of a lot of the poets we get there. I'm what you call a profound amateur. And I love, of course, the amateurism in poetry. I didn't get an MFA. And there are many wonderful poets who didn't get an MFA and are just self-taught. They love the word. They read. That's key. You got to read poetry. And so the workshop is for all levels and interests in poetry. But I've been writing poems since I was 8. And like many other poets, it's because it's what we have to do. It's how we connect with ourselves and with the great cosmic consciousness, if you will, and everybody else.
Well, cosmic consciousness, that gets to a profound level too. But I think one of the profundities came in one of the early poems that I read, and to hear it sounded out will be good. I have read it out loud myself, but the Thin Man books, I don't know if they're very favorable to you still, but Thin Man books and not saying the F word. I think that one will show a great deal of this this wit that you profess. How about that one?
Well, I will say before I read it, I'll set it up a bit. I was invited to be a featured reader at a bookstore, and that was wonderful. And then I kept getting this series of emails from the organizer saying, you know, Michael, we're excited to have you and all that, but you can't, you know, say the F word. So I wrote this poem for that reading, but I changed the name of the bookstore to protect the innocent. So Thin Man Books is a product of my imagination. I didn't want to implicate any particular bookstore because, of course, it was an independent bookstore and I love independent bookstores. So this is called Not Saying the F Word. You can't say the F word at Thin Man Books. It's a Amelie Rendley bookstore, illed to the brim with delicate ears. It's like a church consecrated to the word that can't be spoken. Children, exotic bonsai, are fertilized, pruned, and worshipped. If you ain't say the F word, then I'm almost certain you ain't say the C word either. But you and probably say suck, since every baby does it and teenagers use it constantly. The vernacular for bowel movement is dicey. Let's assume you ain't a the S word either. Makes it hard to tell uck like a baby from uck the bad word, but better afe than ari. That till leaves hundreds of thousands of words with which to express yourself. Oh, as my author used to a, quit your itching. Not exactly, I oppose we ain't a the B word either. It's a Amelie Rendley Ook store dedicated to Readem of Peach. And as poets, our duty is to E Erdius and not A anything controversial.
Very, very good. Yes, the Readem of Peach. That has to bring a smile or a laugh.
Well, and you know,
Readem of Peach.
maybe a gentle way to express one of my mantras, which is that I do want poets to be controversial and to not, you know, there's so much worry in modern poetry and amongst poets of offending somebody. And I've always felt if you're going to write anything, anything beyond maybe a Hallmark card, you're going to offend somebody. That just comes with the territory. And it's a terrible loss to humanity to have people looking over their shoulders and worry about what they're writing. They need to follow their muse, whatever it may be. And so that's what I'm getting at. I'd love to read, can I read something along those lines from a, you know, I don't want to just read me. I love Ilya Kaminsky.
Okay.
Do you mind if I, there's...
No, read someone else's if you wish. Ilya Kaminsky, okay.
This is from his book, Deaf Republic. It's such a deft, but such a powerful poem. And this is really what poetry can do. It's from Deaf Republic, In a Time of Peace. Inhabitant of Earth for 40-something years, I once found myself in a peaceful country. I watch neighbors open their phones to watch a cop demanding a man's driver's license. When the man reaches for his wallet, the cop shoots into the car window, shoots. It is a peaceful country. We pocket our phones and go to the dentist to pick up the kids from school, to buy shampoo and basil. Ours is a country in which a boy shot by police lies on the pavement for hours. We see in his open mouth the nakedness of the whole nation. We watch others watch. The body of a boy lies on the pavement exactly like the body of a boy. It is a peaceful country. And it clips our citizens' bodies effortlessly the way the president's wife trims her toenails. All of us still have to do the hard work of dentist appointments, of remembering to make a summer salad, basil, tomatoes. It is a joy, tomatoes, add a little salt. This is a time of peace. I do not hear gunshots, but watch birds splash over the backyards of the suburbs. How bright is the sky as the avenue spins on its axis? How bright is the sky? Forgive me, how bright.
I'm glad you brought that one up. Yes, the agitation is an element in that, in the poetry that we need to express, irritate. There's much still to irritate in people to get them to act.
Yes.
Well done. I'm glad you brought that in. But, you are concerned about other things as well on in the natural world. Using a B word, you were writing about the absence of bees. There were bees here, you say, in the beginning of one verse. That one may not agitate so many, but it is an important issue of our time too. How about there were bees?
There were bees here, fat, clownish bumbles, all fuzz and buzz, caked with pollen, not menacing wasps with stingers like angry fingers, but gravity-defying fat workers hoovering over dahlias like cleaning ladies, crawling in and out of snapdragons, miners silly with gold dust of lily stamen, struck dumb by chrysanthemums, intoxicated by delphinium, adoring each allium like plump postmen pausing to fondle the pensioners' breasts. There were bees here, where now there are only hungry spiders, memories, the sorrow of ripe, lonely blossoms open to the night, sighing, who will love me now? Who will love me now? The bees all gone. Who will sip my nectar, stroke my petals tenderly, visit me the lonely summer afternoon, take me home and churn my kiss to honeycomb?
A flower's point of view.
Yeah, exactly.
That one. But still, wonderful lines, the plump postman. I actually read this out to my mother this morning, and she laughed heartily at several of the metaphors in here, how wonderful they were.
Oh, even great.
Intoxicated by delphinium. If only, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
The B word can be used quite effectively, and it needs to be still used to remind people that there are many problems out there, and we need to agitate in also sometimes simple and maybe vulgar ways. Your commentary on how's our day going is, I think, one that speaks encyclopedias on the way we often address one another nonchalantly.
This is called Our Day. How's our day going? Asked the hostess. My day was going just fine till you made it ours. How am I to know what smarmy viruses nest in yours? Your day might have a gram of coke rammed up its ass, an abusive ex-husband with a loaded Glock, undying devotion to the Reverend Sun Myung Moon. Am I being a tad misanthropic here? You're just being nice in the droning way of a can-sanitized workday. Your our day is community, a bear hug, a wet kiss to awaken the romantic under this grizzled elitist grump who stumbled in expecting invisible service, not quirks, at this Olive Garden of Eden in the mall. Truth be told, our day is brighter for your goading wishes. Our day is pressed to the service of poetry, the exploration of our heart, the possibility of metamorphosis in a world choked with products and fixed outcomes. Our day is blissful, erotic, hallucinogenic, freed by the vision of a new world lurching up from the ruins of this empire of greed into the sweet air we all share. Yeah, yes. That was a real visit to the Olive Garden.
Yes.
How's our day?
Sometimes you get some of the best poems in fast food restaurants and post offices and Olive Gardens in the mall, right?
The key is to be open and alert for a poet. Open.
Right. So the sweet air that we all share. It's a problem of finding the sweeter air these days.
Yeah.
We fear that the air might not be so sweet wherever we are. I think some wonder what's flying on the milkweed seed as they work in a field, you know. Could we get it from that too? But yeah, it's a very metaphorically filled poem, but at the same time, we should sometimes be alerted, even though we might seem grumpy, to these casual and unmeant expressions. How to say those with meaning? How to say it with some meaning? When people come from other countries that aren't used to this, have a wonderful day, have a good day, that sort of thing, they say, you won't believe what the person at Albertson told me on leaving.
I've been reading a lot of British and Irish and Scottish detective novels, and they're always talking about Americans doing things like that.
Yes.
Scornfully.
The longish poem, Bolt of Lightning. Have you had many responses from the Bolt of Lightning as you have read that?
Fortunately, the big guy upstairs, if there is one, hasn't responded, because I rather challenge him to smite me. And I've read this in many forums, and so far, so good.
You could read that one with as much verve as you wish.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'd be happy to. But what I'll say is that there is movement over it. You know, we write You know, the old saying, and I always did this in my novels also, is write what you know, which I think is too stultifying at all, completely. I think we write to discover as much as we write what we know. And by writing this, I discovered a level of uncertainty in my atheism that was interesting. And what that's what this brings out. A bolt of lightning. This is based on a true story. I mean, there really is a news story about this touchdown Jesus sculpture that was struck by lightning. So this is, okay. That's the inspiration. Mm-hmm. A confirmed atheist, suddenly I waver. I do. I tremble under God's great thunder. All the fault of touchdown Jesus, a cheap styrofoam and fiberglass non-recyclable savior fantasy who once rose six stories above the primordial muck of the reflecting pond scum off the shoulder of I-75 in Ohio until Godfather Doom smote him with a bolt of lightning. Jay Touch, how often have your holy stalkers resurrected you and subjected you to one indignity after another, as if crucifixion, bleeding wooden totems, splinters of the cross up the ass, prayers for the winning lotto ticket, or the death of heathens wasn't mortification enough? This time, erecting you a stone's throw from the Hollywood hustler porn shop, beefy Republicans jerking off to jerky images of nuns fingering their rosaries and moaning, oh, 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 Jesus, 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 I'm coming, touching themselves to come to you, Jay Touch. You the man, all stiff, your arms stuck straight up like a perp in the cop searchlight as the Hummers on I-75 incinerate the crusty night air. Touchdown, Jay. Maybe it's because my dad set strict standards too that I feel for you, stuck praising a Lord who nailed you up there in the first place. The same stern dad who commanded Abraham to kill his own son, then sold the memoir titled My Life as a Vengeful God to the Jews for a few shekels, pogroms, one bloody Holocaust and renunciation of pagan idols, long before you were immaculately conceived. I feel your pain, touchdown. You must have been a disappointment to the old reaper with all that love your neighbor and camel through the eye of a needle socialist shit. You were a sensualist, a hippie, all that mucking about with a prostitute and preaching make love, not war. Is that why he drove the nails through your hands? Why the enduring metaphor of the crucifixion is burning stigmata, unbearable pain oozing from the loving, life-giving laying on of hands? Small wonder he had you crucified. He thought you were soft, maybe figured you'd back off, sell out to the moneylenders or the Romans, start your own line of designer sandals. Integrity is what omnipotent tyrants can't abide, like bloodied Marlon Brando getting up again and again despite the goons' fists. So he had you fried one last time in a burst of lightning till the highway was clogged with sinners dancing round the funeral pyre, high on toxic plumes of irony, the only second coming in sight, hot sperm at the Hollywood hustler, the real origin of this profane species. I tremble, Jesus. I don't get all this existential glee with the smell of sulfur still hanging in the heavy night air. Why cheer Ma Nature for this pinpoint strike at your styrofoam bleeding heart when the only collateral damage is a random universe? Worshippers of irony might better see the dark hand of God and be afraid. We who spent years scoffing at his shadow, forgetting that all the evidence torn from the pages of history says only this: he is real as pain and his name is Satan. Or maybe it was just a freak storm.
Well, that should stir some up. Stirred my mind up for 2.5 pages.
Yeah, now, well, that gets back to not aing anything controversial.
Yes, now you say that was an image that actually appeared someplace?
Well, there was this statue of Jesus with his arms raised by I-75 in Ohio, and it was made out of styrofoam and other stuff. And because his arms were raised kind of in a benediction, He was known locally as Touchdown Jesus because he looked like the ref signaling a touchdown. And it was struck by lightning, and it was near the Hollywood Hustler porn shop. Yes, yes.
Damned interesting that. Yes. Have you heard about obelisks appearing in recent days here and there?
Yeah, I saw that.
One in Utah. Yeah, I know. It's amazing what people will do for attention, but that one certainly has a certain iconoclastic tendency in it. And you've made the most of it with your poem too. You do have also a quiet poem, a very quiet work, perhaps somewhat simple compared to many of your other poems, but I think that one has a very profound image in it too. Would you read that?
Oh, I'd love to. Thanks for pointing it out. Quiet. When the women stopped speaking, we could still hear them. They spoke with their breath, their tears, their breasts. In the steamy cold of twilight, they spoke with downcast eyes. Where are my children, they asked. Where are my soft, naked children? It was so quiet, we had to cover our ears.
Deserves certainly a moment of quiet around it. And I think the way you placed that one on the page with so much white space around it was very effective. Not that it's concrete poetry or anything like that, but sometimes the design is where you put that poem on the page. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have quite a bit of advice at times too that poets espouse. They endorse certain behaviors, and you have one. At least it's addressed to the people of the future, to the people of the 22nd century. How about if we close with your reading of that one, which I think does have force to it.
All right, thank you. And let me say before I close, it's been so much fun talking to you, David. This is great.
Well, it's wonderful. This is the best way I could think of to spend time with a poet, although it'd be face to face with a glass of wine or a pint of beer would be even better.
Oh, yeah. next year.
Yes, when the time comes, right.
To the people of the 22nd century, I am sorry we shit all over the earth. Perhaps you are corporate androids and don't care. Perhaps it's another Stone Age and you can't read. You may be so drugged you imagine you're in paradise, though you are eating your own scabs and quaffing mucus. Or you've become beings of pure energy, impervious to Republicans. Yes, it takes a poet to speak your language. Back now, we had no clue everything was run by cockroaches. We thought nuclear power was our idea. We thought Uranus was a planet, not God's sphincter, which of course explains all those asteroids. We didn't know the unified theory was on the back of the Jell-O box. Do you still have air? Cherry blossoms? The Beatles? Do kids still kill themselves to be cool? Do you floss daily? Do Christians and Muslims still believe in the truth fairy? Is anyone still there? You think you can do better. So did we. Let me tell you of my time. We lived, lusted, f***ed up, were forgotten. It was grand, so grand. You should have been here.
You have been listening to the wit and the wicked wisdom of Michael Shine of Portland
And I can't thank you enough, Michael. It was a wonderful treat to hear you reading your works.
Thanks very much, David. It's been a pleasure. Hello, Tacoma.
You've been listening to Sound Poetry, KTAH, Radio Tacoma 101.9. I've been your host today, David Gilmore.